Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So after that's happening, you can see the camera goes to the touchline and Dean Smith is pissed off, obviously. And the fourth official's trying to calm him down. And you just see Dean Smith say, he's a fucking prick.
Brilliant.
And he's right.
Yeah, good to see Dean Smith got a bit of fire in his belly.
Hi guys, Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left while you were sleeping.
That's all it took. And I chalked the lines. Yep, just like I thought. 4 out of 5 lost. Villa are in free fall. You laughed at me, Liam, when I said after the Southampton game that this was going to be the theme now. We were just going to go and start getting hammered in every match. Lost 4 out of 5, the last two to Brighton and West Ham. It turns out that the anomaly in those 5 games that Arsenal are the shit team. We thought that was a good result and we had just arrested the slide. But no, Arsenal are just exceptionally bad. Villa beat them well, and then went back into normal service by losing to Brighton and West Ham. And the fall is continuing. They are now in 10th. It's no longer a good start. It's a decent start if you take it 9 games, but if you take it the last 5 games, it's relegation form. It's Fulham form. Fucking Fulham are winning games today as well. It's not good, and I just want to know, where did this myth come from that Villa have more balance now? I think this is coming from journalists who are close to the club and they're just spreading whatever shit they're being spoon-fed by the club. Like, Villa have never had more balance. Villa, after the restart at the end of last season, shut up shop, and they were really good when they had 11 players defending, and they didn't look in any way threatening going forward. They were tight, and then they had good players that won the matches sometimes. And then the start of this season, they were winning games, but they weren't good defensively, and they never have been. Like, every time a team goes forward against Villa, they look unbelievably susceptible to conceding. And yet again, we see it tonight. West Ham offer not much, probably 2 attacks that I can remember. Maybe 3, if we just throw in one there, assume there was another one. And 2 goals, and that's it. And it's game over. Villa could score 1 out of 4 sitters. They get an unlucky break. They're not even an inch offside. They are offside. It's annoying, but accept it. They're offside. And they lose the game because of 2, I don't know if it's defensive lapses, but 2 attacks, and they've conceded yet again. Welcome to another night of supporting Aston Villa, Liam.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, just to clear something up there from the start, I told you Arsenal were shit. I said we'd finish between 10th and 14th.
I think it was 2nd and 14th after the Arsenal match.
But yeah, no, you're right. What is the point of playing well if you concede from every attack? Like, why work so hard to get back into a game to dominate a big, awkward, cumbersome team if it's just going to be a goal every time somebody attacks? I mean, the second goal was a shit little dink ball into the box. Sort yourselves out. The game's only just begun. There's 30 seconds gone at the start of the second half. Get rid of that ball. It's a crap pass from Benrahma. He doesn't even look up. He just plays a general ball into the box and we concede straight away after working so hard against that useless lump of a team that David Moyes has assembled.
He dinks a ball into the box to two players, two of his own players who are facing away from the goals, and there's two centre-backs behind him. And fuck, he's done well to flick it behind him, but like, it's just annoying that, yeah, there's nobody, as you say, they're not woken up. Villa, after the first 10 minutes were grim, they were fairly bad. Obviously, they conceded in that. And then, yeah, they completely dominated the match, and you felt like they were saying at halftime as well that Villa will probably go out now and fancy themselves to go on and win this. Said that against Brighton as well, and of course, they switch off, and of course, they concede again. Do you want to talk about the first goal? I have written down here, Matt Target can fuck off. I know, like, you know, they're talking about Douglas Luiz or John McGinn picking up Ogbonna, but it is zonal marking. Like, Ogbonna has come into Matt Target's zone, and Target hasn't even bothered trying. Like, he's just shit himself. He's jumped. He's not even tried to get up. Like, he jumps an inch off the ground and ducked his head as he got up. It was pathetic yet again.
Well, yeah, I mean, Villa couldn't deal with a throw-in. Then they couldn't deal with a corner. Then three players all follow two players who make the run from that split in the middle. And then you've got Ming standing in the middle of the box like a spare dick. And then you've got Target isolated at the back post. I mean, if you're going to have a bank of zonal marking, make it your best headers of the ball. Let them be the ones that are attacking it. Don't have Target just standing free at the back post with no running option. You feel a bit sorry for Matt Target there, because Ogbonna's a big lad and Target's the worst athlete who's getting paid. He was never going to win that ball.
Nor was he ever going to try it. Like, yeah, he probably wasn't ever going to win it, but it's just the optics of him. Like, I was sort of thinking, what's the point of him being there? But, you know, if somebody coming into his zone is just not his responsibility anymore, because that person shouldn't be in his zone unmarked. Like, he's in your zone now, react.
But that's,
like,
yeah, you're right, react. But what's he going to do against Ogbonna? Target shouldn't be covering a zone because he can't cover a zone.
Yeah. Let's talk about Trez. Sorry, go on.
You said the first 10 minutes they were bad. The first 20 minutes, Conan, they were fucking shambles. They were all over the place. They didn't know what they were doing. You had Grealish dropping into the sweeper position. You had Hourihane spreading 40-yard passes to people who were in worse positions than him. You had McGinn playing blind passes. You had Mings just doing this unbelievably irritating habit of his of standing over the ball and then just drilling one into somebody's feet that inevitably has to come back to him because the ball's hit too hard and just into somebody who's running, sprinting out from the centre-forward position.
Yeah.
Useless in the first 20 minutes.
Well, it either comes back to him, it's not controlled because he's just drilled into somebody's feet, or it goes to Jack Grealish. Like, those are the options, and Grealish can usually do something with it, or it's a pass into Grealish with three men around him who are just waiting to kick the legs off him. I want to talk about Trezeguet. We'll get into his miss later in the Ronnie Rossenthal Award, obviously, but I don't want to see somebody crying on a football pitch because he missed a shot. Like, that's just not... I don't need to see Ollie Watkins trying to get his head up, especially considering what Ollie Watkins is about to do in the next 10 minutes. this happened as well against Brighton, and we felt sorry for him because he was playing so well against Brighton. He kept missing, and he kept, like, feeling sorry for himself, or, you know, it's almost like he's aware of a social media reaction. Get off social media if you're that sensitive. And it's just like, oh, please. And he wants people to know how much it would have meant to him. Mate, you're getting paid loads. Like, I don't need to see you for the next 2 minutes crying about it. And I definitely don't need to see a player, a teammate coming over in the middle of the match saying, come on, get on with it. Like, get the fuck over it. Like,
yeah, people react differently to moments of, I was going to say ill fortune there, but Jesus Christ, it's of his own making. I mean, you've monumentally cocked up, so spend the next 20 minutes of the match desperately trying to make up for it, because you've just fucked over your teammates by not being able to play football on a fucking football pitch.
Yeah, and this is it. Like, I don't blame him for how he's feeling, right? Because I'd be similar. I'm not playing in Premier League, but if I missed something or made a balls up or something, it would be sitting with me for definitely the next while, you know, whereas good players can just shake it off and go after the next ball. But I would never want to show it, especially like that. Again, I know there's a culture difference and personality difference, but just like the way that it's funny, like when he's split open and obviously probably concussed, he's looking to just play on, just get on with it. It's like, yes, it's like, don't do that when you're concussed or split open. Do that when you've just missed a sitter. Get on with it. Like, yeah, get after the next ball. Try harder because you're coming off anyway. And speaking of Trezeguet, I was just thinking about the five-a-side theory. Something I haven't really developed too much, but you're only as good as your worst player in five-a-side. It's not the team with the best players who win. It's the team with the worst player who loses all the time. And Villa have Trezeguet and Matt Target. And maybe can we put Conor Hourihan into that from open play? Yeah, they have weak links who are so far away from the rest of the team that it's going to get shown up. We keep coming back to this, but time and time again, it's getting shown up. The good players, like Villa have Grealish, who's good enough to play on any team in the world and star in any team in the world. And then they have Matt Target playing on the same flank. Never mind what's happening over another flank. It's, yeah, the five-a-side theory is going to cripple Villa so many times.
Yeah, it is. And it always comes out in big moments. And in games like that, at that higher level, it nearly always comes down to moments. But if you miss a sitter, or if you end up having your weakest player isolated against a huge centre half, then you're going to lose a lot of games. But I thought Villa's biggest problem tonight was the way they were playing. I didn't really think it was okay. Like, you know, Trezeguet scores and Target's not at the back post, then they don't lose the game. But you know, there was just desperation the way they were playing for much of the game, even at the start of the second half. Whenever they scored that goal, West Ham, Villa lost their head. They're playing balls to Watkins and Grealish from far too deep. There was no connection with the midfield. Dougie came into it in the last 20 minutes, but him and McGinn were absolutely anonymous in that game. Hourihan somehow always found himself either too deep or too high.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, everybody was just on the pitch. Like, let's get the ball to Jack or Ollie as quick as we can, regardless of what has developed on the pitch in the meantime. I thought there was huge problems with the system and just with the confidence of the players and how they reacted. So you can see the two early goals in both halves, and it took them 20 minutes to get back into the game after those. Like, people were saying Villa dominated the game. I think that's forgetting what actually happened. They were an absolute shambles for the first 20 minutes of the first half and for the first 15 minutes of the second half. And then whenever they missed the penalty and whenever Trezeguet missed that, those two things happened far too close together, and it killed the team, killed the players. It sucked the life out of them. And for the last 10 minutes as well, Villa were doing nothing. It was just erratic, nonsense play. No patterns of play. They just forgot everything they were doing. Jack Grealish was coming to 60 yards out again. Now, it almost worked because Jack Grealish is one of the best players in the world. But that's not how you win football games.
No, it's not. And again, yeah, you're right. Like, if you're not going to play for 35 minutes of a game, then that's a lot to be asking them to go on and win matches. Like, it's really annoying because I had a whole thing. I wanted to do a podcast dedicated to Jack Grealish because I thought, like, after he scored that equalizer, the way he set up Watkins, we'll talk about that in the Ronnie Rosenthal Award, obviously. You know, I thought, like, yeah, he's going to win this game for Villa. You're right about the penalty as well. I haven't seen a worse reaction to a team missing a penalty than that because the time flew by so quickly after that. It was so grim, but just how flat everybody became. But Grealish for the goal, like, this is the thing, right? People maybe don't realize exactly what Grealish brings to Villa every week, and I know, like, I've been guilty of almost holding the too high a standard, like, you know, for not just scoring three goals every match, but like the goal isn't even that special for him. But just if you compare it to what a normal player does in those situations, so his touch is great. Like, he takes a touch, it's great, it's in a tight area, but it just stops the ball dead. People back off and they go out wide because that's what the play is. Like, that's what it normally is to go out wide or to sit it up for another player, or at least they just stop and have a look to see what's happening. But no, like, Grealish just goes. He goes around the corner. He goes straight at goals. He goes in between the bodies. He gets closer and closer to the defenders. Keeps going. He takes Souchez's space. It's amazing the way he does that. Cuts across him. He shoots. He scores. Like this is coming from a position where he picks up the ball, where most of the time, like, if you notice, and we shouldn't be comparing him, but every time the ball came to Conor Hourihan, bang, first touch, just straight back to whoever was closest to him. He's neat, he's tidy, but he's not a player of the caliber of Jack Grealish. Grealish touches the ball, and without even thinking, he goes, and he doesn't care what's around him. Like, then we could go on about it, like, you know, we could talk about, like, he set target off on an overlap, but rather than just playing the ball on the outside of the defender, he nutmegs the defender, so target is closer into the box, and he's got a better position, obviously, and then target just trickles it. He falls into the ball and trickles it across into two West Ham defenders. There was one where he had a defender up his arse, Grealish, and he just dragged it around him, like, with a flick into Hourihan. Nothing came of it again. And this is the point I keep coming back to. Like, that clip that's going around of him now, the one where he set up Watkins for a free header 5 yards out, he had four players, like, behind him, like, between him and the box. Four. And he's able to do, I don't know what he did, I don't know how he conceived of it, but he takes them all out. He gets space, left foot, lifts it into a striker who needs to be fucking scoring. And just one final point, like, there's also a thing that's happening now. It's like the normalization of fouling Jack Grealish. You know, referees are not given yellow card for yellow card offences because Grealish is being fouled so much, and because there's this narrative that he goes down easy as well. And he does go down easy in some instances, but there's a narrative that he is going down, and they're probably thinking about that as well. Like, watch out for the next game. The first foul, the other team are complaining and they're suggesting that it's not a foul at all. So what happens then was, like, I don't know who it was, like Bonham maybe, but just comes straight in about 2 seconds late, kicks him. It's obviously a yellow card, and it's not even in the referee's thought process. Where do you want to start there? Do you want to talk about how far above Grealish is to everybody else, or the normalization of fouling?
Yeah, like, I think the goal was the first thing he started talking about there about 8.5 minutes ago. No, it was beautiful though. It's a good ball into Grealish for the goal, and that gives him the impetus because he gets there ahead of Souček and, as you said, takes the space away from him. But the best thing about the goal is that Grealish decides there's a goal on here so early on from 50 yards out, and that's just because he's such a special player and he's really embraced the fact that he's the talisman of the club. But, like, I thought the rest of the goal after that, I thought the rest of the goal was really bad from Grealish. he carries the ball too far. He gives himself a shit angle. He hits a shit shot, and it's 1-1. He was incredible tonight. That touch where he just, the three West Ham players that he just goes inside, and the fourth who's standing outside them as well, just all look at each other. Even, you know, it's like, where has he gone? Like, you know, they look so confused, so bamboozled, and Watkins has to score. And that's the thing. How many more times can Grealish do things like that and then not start thinking, I have to start playing with better players?
Well, like, this is it. Like, I tweeted it tonight, like, and I never thought I would do it, but I'm so disappointed for him. It's like, imagine Messi does that tonight, like, and sets up, like, someone in Barcelona would miss, but sets up Fadi Ansu, he'll probably score. And, like, you know, that's obviously a worldwide clip. This will do all right. Like, look at this bit of skill from Grealish. But, like, even the clip that I saw, it doesn't even show what happened. It doesn't even show he's crossed to set up somebody 6 yards out. Like, if he's playing in a better team, that's scored. And then he starts, like, even you can see it the way it's happening with England now, because more people watching, there's better players around him. Just starts getting the respect that he deserves. And, yeah, it's probably more fun for him as well. He must be coming off thinking, hey, you can see his face, he looks shell-shocked. Like, obviously Villa did well, but, like, he's thinking, for fuck's sake, how have we lost to West Ham? Yeah. Like, what more do I have to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And just on then the normalization of the fouls, yeah, never underestimate how stupid people are. Never underestimate how willing and desperate they are to follow a narrative. And West Ham were so eager to put that narrative into the referee's head tonight that Jack Grealish was going down too easy and that he was buying fouls. Jack Grealish does go down too easy fairly often, but that is fucking irrelevant if he's getting saved down in the next one. Like him diving is irrelevant to whether or not the next one is a yellow card.
It's a separate issue. Like I wish he didn't dive ever. I wish nobody dived ever. I wish Cristiano Ronaldo never dived. Like, but it doesn't matter if he's getting, as you say, sized down. If he's getting hatcheted, it's a foul, it's a yellow card. It doesn't mean that he goes down easy when he's getting fucking lumped from underneath him.
Yeah, absolutely.
VAR. like I say, like, it's annoying in that instance. It's very annoying, but like, you want to be consistent. And look, offside is the one thing that you can definitely just be black and white on. And actually, I feel really sympathetic for Ollie Watkins there, because you can see in the replay, he is actually so far onside when he can see Matt Target lining up to, and actually not lining this up to criticize Matt Target, who actually had a really nice cross as well, and Konsa should have scored earlier on. I forgot about that one. But he could see Target about to swing his left foot at it, and he starts running. He's actually about 2 yards behind the line, and then just by the time it is hit and the line probably moves out, he's just a nick offside. But the really annoying thing about VAR is just not bothering to check Haller just deliberately and very late coming in, stamping on Mings, a red card offence, and just nobody interested in it. They're just thinking, this is the middle of the pitch, play still going on. We've had a bad day yesterday. Let's just hope this doesn't come back and bite us in the arse. And it probably won't. That's the most annoying thing about it all. And yet again, the inconsistencies rumble on.
Yeah, just on the offside thing, I mean, they do have it pretty mathematically as accurate as they can get it. But, you know, players' arms and legs move faster than cameras can pick up. So I don't think it's as black and white as people like to pretend that it is. But yeah, like he's offside, but he's only offside as well because they've changed the handball rule. He's offside because his upper arm is now offside. But anyway, yeah, he's offside. Fine, move on. Mings getting stamped on by Haller was disgraceful. There was a lot of bite. Now he throws his foot down. Like he's not trying to block the ball there. Like, you know, he is pushing his foot down onto Mings there. And maybe he didn't bother looking at it. And it's the old classic professional footballers need to be in Stockley Park thing that I think is absolute nonsense. I prefer referees to be making refereeing decisions. But have they just thought that's the normal one where it's a late challenge from somebody who's clearing the ball up the field, which happens 2 or 3 times every game, and they just think that's the same as that? They can't properly see what's happening there, so they don't bother looking at it again. Because if anybody gives that a second glance, it's definitely a red card.
Yeah, I think it's a case of, yeah, maybe let's just not look at it again and we won't find something. Like, you know, let's not open the envelope and hopefully that bill goes away. Like, you know, and like, because it's like Sky should replay. I don't know if that means that VAR are looking at it, but Sky should replay. It was very clear. You could hear Martin Tyler and even Alan Smith thinking, oh, like that's, and in the context, like the things were heating up. There's a lot of animosity going on the sideline. And then Haller's just come in and just done him. Like, you know, yeah, completely unnecessary and, like, very vicious. Like, that stuff. Like, that's black and white. Like, he just...
Yeah.
Somebody's come in and the referee's missed it. He's missed it. It's a clear and obvious error. Pull him back. Tell him to have a look at it.
Yeah. And that I think that whole... That tackle is just emblematic for me of why it was so fucking frustrating tonight. Because West Ham are shite. They're a team of just agricultural, useless players. The only thing they're good at is trying to stand on people's legs. They're a useless team, so losing to them is particularly galling.
Ross Barkley has become a big loss. The Hourihane and McGinn were sort of rotating into that role. McGinn went down for a while, like especially when Villa were doing really badly at the start of the first half. And I don't know, did they think that he was going to bring the same sort of platform with his touch and his arse and running power? Because they think McGinn's got running power. Like it's not the same. Like Barkley's a big unit. You play him the ball in tight areas, he's always making himself available, and then he goes at teams as well because he's strong and he's powerful and he's obviously good at football. And then Hourihane then, like, do you know what, let's do a little bit on him here. I'll have him save for later on as well, but like he's just not that good a player. Like I can see now why he's so normal with Ireland, because we were watching him at Villa over the last year and a half, 2 years, and he's been very good. Like he's been good. Like he's been above average by far. I've actually just relegated him from very good to above average. He's been good, but like he's got way better players around him. Like, you know, whereas you see it tonight, there the difference between him and Barkley is that, you know, Barkley's a big player in a team and he's trying to make things happen. Hourihan's trying to fit into a team, so it's, yeah, it's jarring to see the difference of him. I mentioned that he doesn't have a look around him. He just pops the ball back. He's neat and tidy. He's got a great left foot, but he's just not offering anywhere near the same, an open play.
No, not at all. I mean, Ross Barkley is really clever with his movement as well. How many times do you see Ross Barkley just coming into the box and Grealish just rolling a ball into him? Now, he invariably missed whenever he was playing, but it was just, it was on all the time. And never underestimate as well how much that affects a team. Whenever, if you can even put it in a team's head that you're creating chances, it just does stuff to their defenders psychologically. So, you know, I remember Alex Ferguson talking about Ronaldo. You know, he's having 10 shots a game. And some people might look at that and say, oh, he's wasteful or he's being greedy. If you have a guy who's just shooting constantly and they're all on target, that really affects the other team. They think they're under a lot more pressure than they are. So if you have big 6'2" Ross Barkley coming steaming through the middle 5 or 6 times a game, you take a step back. You start panicking. You start worrying more whenever Jack Grealish has the ball. Your head's a bit more scrambled. Like, and Conor Hourihan doesn't offer you that. And I was saying there to start, he just always seemed to find himself. I think he thought he had to fulfill this role, and he wasn't able for it. He was always too high. He was ahead of the ball far too early, or he was just going too deep. He thought he was trying to do some sort of rotation thing with Jack Grealish. It was a mess. It just didn't work.
Does that really show you the value of positioning as well? Probably something that people, they do take for granted. They don't realize that's like positioning and timing. That's an important trait for a footballer. And like you're mentioning Hourihan being too high, right? But not once was that of any use to Ollie Watkins. He never linked up with him once the way Barkley does. He was too high. He was just out of the game, and then he was too deep every time, and he wasn't affecting the game the way he should be. Again, an open play. But yeah, and actually, just on Barkley, I have a quick section here before we move on to some WhatsApp whinges. I don't know, it's a bullshit section, maybe we'll call it. But like, speaking of, like, you're just watching this game now, you never know. According to Dean Smith, Ross Barkley performed the highest number of high-intensity sprints in his first 3 games.
I tell you, they're all going in the fucking forward direction anyway. I have never seen anybody less willing to get back.
So maybe he's just saving himself, or like maybe that's why he's always picking up the ball in dangerous areas.
And that's not a problem either, if that's his role. I don't want players wasting energy doing something that they're not good at as well, because like Jack Grealish, he's absolutely useless at it. He has no intuition for it. He doesn't understand what's happening around him. He can't follow men. Players just go off his shoulder all the time. And we talked about seeing Jack Grealish doing this, trying his poor little heart out in the left wing. His head's on a swivel and it's gone. He doesn't know what's happening.
At least with Grealish, right, he's more nimble. Barkley, I always feel he's just going to barge somebody over. He's taking up too much space. You know, it's always like, oh, we could really do with him out of there. Like, you know, especially how quickly he could perform one of those high-intensity sprints into the back of someone. What's up, Winges? Roy Keane thinks Scott Parker is a dweeb.
In one single moment, your whole life can turn round. I stand there for a minute, staring straight into the ground.
Roy Keane thinks everybody's a dweeb.
The world feels like it's caved in, proper sorry frown. Please let me show you where we could only just be for us.
I just thought, every time he cut back from Parker being interviewed, for some reason he's been interviewed 2 or 3 times before the game, and he's talking shit, obviously, and every time he cut back, it looked like Roy Keane was holding in a laugh, and it looked like, you know, Carragher had that little knowing look that he has sometimes, you know, when he knows what somebody's laughing at or whatever.
Dry your eyes, mate. I know it's hard to take, but her mind has been made up.
Like, he's a proper football bloke, you know, and he tries to pretend that he's intelligent as well. So then pretentious football writers can get behind him. Scott and Roy Keane, just that's absolute fodder for Roy Keane. You know, he snuffs that out immediately. He hates bullshit, and you're right, he hates Scott Parker. Like, even at the end of that game, the story isn't fucking Scott Parker. The camera's on Scott Parker's face. Aston Villa have just climbed into the Champions League places, never to be dislodged. That's the story. It's not fucking Scott Parker getting spanked again.
All right, let's just get into it. Really, like, what is the point of playing Ollie Watkins? 100% of the passes to him aren't on. 90% of them get cut out.
Yeah, there's all the reasons to wonder what's the point of playing Ollie Watkins after that tonight. But yeah,
well, that was before he missed his fucking sitter and his penalty.
The balls that were being played into him were coming from far too deep. It was terrible. Like, what? You've got Douglas Luiz, John McGinn, Conor Hourihan. They're nothing if they're not ball playing midfielders. Why were they bypassing the midfield? There was no neat little passing in the middle of the pitch unless Jack Grealish was far too deep, which we didn't want him to be. It was just lofted balls over the top to Ollie Watkins, which he invariably controlled incredibly well and impressively, but it was just pointless then as well because our midfielders are 50 yards behind him and Trezeguet wasn't on the pitch until he missed that fucking sitter.
I was genuinely thinking, like, I'd just rather, like, play an armored midfielder. Like, this is pointless. Like, this is absolutely pointless. Just watching him, like, trying to get on the end of these balls that you're talking about. The one time, and this makes it more annoying, remember the one that he took off Trezeguet's left foot and he just nicked it wide? It was a really nice interplay between him, McGinn, Hourihan, and then Trezeguet had a bad touch, but it went to Watkins, and then he tried to half ollie it and it just went wide, and it was like, just do that more. Like, he caught straight through the middle, like right through the middle from 40 yards out all the way to 12 yards out. And yeah, as you see, like, they've shown they can do it, they just don't. Like, this is a problem as well with Villa's character. Like, you know, like, you're seeing different elements to Villa losing. Like, you know, tonight is probably an example of just shit players missing big chances, but also, like, you know, and we've seen it in different games and seen it a bit tonight, just the lack of character to just keep playing the same way. Like, yet again, Villa have conceded and they don't win. But, like, yeah, too many periods in this game, they didn't just stick to what was obviously way better than West Ham's level.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this already. As soon as West Ham scored, which was very early in both halves, Villa were in absolute shambles for the next 15, 20 minutes. It was desperate to watch. And I can only imagine what the coaching staff are thinking whenever this is happening. Because they're obviously being told to get the ball out left to Jack Grealish as quickly as possible. But don't do that at any expense.
Yeah.
Make sure the pass is on. Like, you can't just do it if he's got a left wing back and a left or the right wing back and the right centre half just standing next to him. It's not on then. Don't bother playing it. Just play it into one of your three midfielders who are supposed to want the ball constantly.
That's another thing about, not to get at him too much, but Hourihan, say, like, he telegraphs his passes to Grealish as well. Like, you talked about, like, the deference to Jack Grealish, but Hourihan's just, like, facing him all the time, and, like, he's forcing Grealish onto the touchline, and there's players beside him, obviously, and Hourihan's playing with him anyway, like, whereas a better player obviously shapes their body differently to attract somebody to them and then play it to Grealish, or Jesus, might have a look. There might be somebody else on. Maybe a record signing who's playing up front for you who has shown that he's actually pretty decent. Yeah, speaking of Grealish, this one was 30 seconds before the equaliser. Why is Grealish spending 40 seconds complaining about conceding a free kick after he trips somebody who's running in his own corner?
Yeah, that was strange. It was a bad trip from Grealish as well. It's just one of those ones whenever you see it. You can see he's going to do it as well from a mile off. And you're like, no, yeah, no, no. And as soon as you do it, you just punch the table if you're sitting at the table like I am. It's really frustrating. It's pointless. The guy's running back towards his own goal. He's running into the corner. He's shit at football. Let him have it in there. He's going to fuck up. Don't just trip him. That's what he wants.
Like, that's what he wants. All he's doing there is he's going to kick it out of play. Like, that's all he can do. Or he's going to kick it to the goalkeeper.
He's going to kick it out for a throw-in, and he's going to fall and stumble back over his own end line and probably hit the advertising hoardings if they weren't 50 foot behind the fucking lines around the pitch like they are at the Olympic Stadium.
Oh, this one grates at me. Every time a fullback hits a cross out for a goal kick, they should be fined a week's wages. And I really mean that.
Yeah, it's so annoying. It's like, you know, I've given it to somebody who's worse at football than me. Don't fuck it up. And like we saw a great cross from Matt Target for the disallowed goal, but the last attack of the game, we saw what he was really fucking about, where he just hooks the ball out for a goal kick. Like, oh, class, thanks, mate. That's now 2 minutes wasted with Fabianski kicking the post. Like, what an absolute dickhead. What was that?
Yeah, but that's it. And like, Matt Cash did it in the first half. I wrote this down after Cash. This isn't getting at Target. Target was obviously way worse and way more annoying. But it's unforgivable. And it's funny because there are two elements to it, right? There's like, I get that people are playing with abandon, right? So like, if you looked, we're talking about Target's cross in the first half where he just trickles it into the first player who takes a touch and carries it out. So he's playing with complete fear there. He's afraid to overhit the ball. It's like, so generally when you're playing with fear, you always underhit everything because you're afraid of a mistake happening from your ball going anywhere. Whereas Cash is coming up trying to whip his foot around it, hits it out for a goal. Like, but it shouldn't happen, regardless of if you're trying to not play with fear. Like, that is something that's so obvious. Like, people in my position, every game seem to kick this ball out of play for a goal kick, and it's never acceptable. So I'm going to make sure that I do not kick this ball out for a goal kick. Like, it's not good. And like, I would genuinely say, sorry, like, you know, you played all right tonight, but, you know, like, you did something ridiculous, or you're not getting paid for tonight's game. Like, your wages are gone. Like, that is something that you just need to just be tuned in for as you're kicking a ball. And by the way, you're right back. You're not crossing the ball that often. So when you do cross it, fucking make sure it doesn't go for a goal kick, if nothing else.
Yeah, and the worst thing, you haven't even mentioned the worst thing about that. It was so unnecessary. I have a little bit of sympathy for someone overhitting the ball if they have to absolutely whip it.
Yeah.
Ollie Watkins has run to the front post. He doesn't have to get it past anybody. He just has to put the right angle on that pass, and it goes to Ollie Watkins. The defenders aren't getting there. They've fallen asleep, and Watkins has run behind them. So there's no need for Cash to hit that out. Like, it nearly hits the all or corner flag before it lands.
Ah, fuck off, Kevin Nolan.
Ah, yeah, but you can just imagine the West Ham fans saying the same thing back about our boy John Terry.
Yeah, I know, but like, Nolan had a bit more of a geezer vibe to him. You know, when the fourth official was given out to him and he just didn't shut up. Like, every time the fourth official would walk away, you could see him just mouthing off, and the fourth official would have to turn around and be like, what are you doing? And then, like, it looked like he had a big smile on his face then when John Terry got the yellow card. You know, you could see the West Ham coach, whoever he was, going up the steps past Nolan, and he was sitting there, like, I don't know if he was laughing out loud or, like, just get off the screen, like, you absolute melt.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a bit headmastery, but, you know, if you've told someone to shut up or to calm down or to stop disrespecting the officials, and then he keeps talking immediately afterwards as you're walking away, give him a yellow card.
Yeah.
The guy's proved himself to be an arsehole. Treat him like one.
Did you say that Dean Smith was giving it the big one?
Dean Smith was giving it the big one, yeah. Do you remember when one of the times, you won't remember the specific one, Jack Grealish got cleaned by a defender up the arse, and he got up and was walking back into position. And for some, it was brilliant that it did, but for some reason, the camera just stayed on Grealish and Miguel Antonio, who was just mouthing off to Grealish for about, it must have been about 30 seconds. But again, it was one of those ones. It's like, yeah, I get it, Antonio. Sometimes he goes down easy, but he hasn't this time. He's been cleaned. The legs have been taken from underneath him. And Antonio just keeps going and going, as if Antonio doesn't dive. And that's the most annoying thing about professional footballers complaining about all their players diving. They all dive.
Yeah.
So who do they think they are? Who do they think they're kidding? We've all seen you holding your face whenever the balls hit you in the shoulder. Like, you know, it's they're all at it, so I don't know what moral high ground they think they're taking. They all look so disgusted as well, waving their hands up. Get up, get up. But anyway, so after that's happening, you can see the camera goes to the touchline and Dean Smith is pissed off, obviously. and that fourth official's trying to calm him down, and you just see Dean Smith say, "He's a fucking prick."
Brilliant.
And he's right.
Yeah, good to see Dean Smith got a bit of fire in his belly. Yeah. Here, what do you think's worse? The footballers who dive complaining about somebody else diving, or somebody like Declan Rice who blatantly fouls people 9 times a game complaining about somebody diving?
Yeah. But Declan Rice is such an arsehole. He complains whenever he's fouled people as well. It's almost the same thing. It's like, you know, mate, you know you fouled him.
That's what I mean. Sorry, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's like, it's so like you are the biggest culprit enemy for blatantly fouling people. You've obviously fouled him. Why are you trying to suggest that there's something else going on here?
Like, you were holding his shirt. You kicked him on the ankle. You know you've done these things. Like, you know, it was you that did them. It was your body that did that. You put your hand out. You were in control of that, Declan. You know you're a cheating bastard. You've been caught. Get over it. No one's dived. You've cheated.
I think Villa concede from 60% of the attacks they face.
Well, you surprised in WhatsApp whinges, you seem to have calmed down because it was 100% at the top of the show. That's pathetic. Like, I've said it already. I mean, there's no point in dominating teams. There's no point in being better than teams. There's no point in having Jack Grealish if a shit cross into the box by a player Villa deemed not good enough to sign results in a goal. I mean, it's a good header from Bowen, but fuck me, deal with that.
Second last one. Does David Moyes think he achieved something here?
Yeah, of course he does. David Moyes is probably so scarred from his time at Real Sociedad and whoever else he was manager of before that, that he just needs every win. I mean, David Moyes has very deliberately put this team together. This team hasn't fallen into his lap. He's put together this team of utter scumbags who are useless at football. So this is exactly the type of game that David Moyes wants to win. One where he creates to. Do you call isolating Matt Target with Ogbonna creating a chance, or you say John Terry's doing fuck all between Monday and Friday?
Well, that's it. We come back to that, yeah.
No, David Moyes is absolutely certain he's achieved something. He's there having a glass of red wine tonight, probably ringing up Fergie.
It's pathetic, but I can actually see where he's coming from. I've just realised what she said. Ringing up Fergie. Did you see me, boys, tonight? It reminds me a bit of Ireland back when Martin O'Neill was managing them and a bit of Mick McCarthy, right, where they don't do anything. They don't do anything but suck the life out of a game and bore a team to death. And ride their luck a little bit. They try hard for the whole game and they're scumbags and they get stuck in. They're up for it. There's animation on the sideline. And they put away a couple of chances that they get, or usually in Ireland's case it was one chance. And then the other team comes away thinking, how the fuck did we not beat those losers?
Yeah.
Like that's always like we were always sort of pretty proud of ourselves. Like we always thought, yeah, like that's what happens. Ireland grind it down and they make it a shit match and then they come away with the result that they wanted, because maybe you realize that teams will miss a lot of big chances. And here we are now in the shoes on the other foot, like where Villa are coming away thinking, what? Stayed of them, they did nothing and they scored 2 goals and we scored 1.
Yeah, well, there's a contradiction in your argument there. I mean, if you understand that teams miss a lot of big chances, then you should probably try to create a lot of big chances yourself. Like, what did David Moyes do this week? He told his players to try hard and he told them to get back behind the ball if we're lucky enough to go in the lead. Like, is that what a manager's job is? How much is David Moyes being paid? Millions of pounds a year, and all he's doing is convincing athletes to run.
Yeah, this is getting hard. Last one, Grealish fucking hates El Ghazi.
Oh, El Ghazi was just what a pointless decision it was to bring on him. I understand players are tired, and I understand you have no other options on your bench, but you don't have, that's not an option. Like, you know, you don't have three options. You've got two options. It was just such a waste of time. You know, there was a couple of times you could see Grealish just kind of look at him and like shake his head, and I just wish the camera had zoomed in so I could just see how disgusted he was, because I could tell from his body language and the movement of his neck that he was annoyed, but I wanted to see it on his face. I wanted to see it in his eyes. But, you know, Villa were so bad and I lost so much hope that there was a moment in the 80th minute where the ball sat up for a volley for El Ghazi at the corner of the box, and he turned it down.
Yeah,
and I was actually annoyed. That's how desperate I was. That's how much hope I had lost. Like, I was just like, just have a spank. Why not? We're not going to create any other chances now. We've stopped playing. Just shoot. He plays at the Grealish. Grealish does something brilliant, and Matt Target fucks it up. But yeah, like, El Ghazi is just a waste of space.
He is. Actually, it's funny you mentioned it, because that was one where I was like, okay, hang on. El Ghazi's taking a decent touch, and he's not ballooned it over the bar. He's giving it to the best player. Okay, I can get on board with this. And then the next 15 minutes, whatever it was pitiful. And then you mentioned Grealish just giving him nice balls, and Ghazi's not even like, I don't even know what to do. It's not even bad touch.
There was one that was, Grealish played around the corner until Ghazi's foot, and it just bounced off him about 10 yards and created a counter attack. Grealish might as well play that off the wall. You know, it was just, what the fuck was that?
Well, here's one for you, right? Like, that, you're saying that's not an option. I agree. Like, I looked at the bench again tonight and thought, for fuck's sake. But would you not bring on, say, Jacob Ramsey and move McGinn out wide? Or, because, and this is a problem with Bertrand Traore, he just keeps drifting out right. He wants to be out right. He wants to come in on his left. Or let's just move McGinn further forward and bring on Jacob Ramsey, because I don't know where El Ghazi's playing when Bertrand Traore's moving out right. But even if you could convince Traore to play in the centre, where he was actually pretty good against Brighton when he came on, move McGinn outright, because he's playing terribly in the middle. You know, when somebody's an other option, then he'll take a nice touch out on the wing. He'll look for the ball out in the wing, whereas Trezeguet won't generally. Could that not change things up a little bit and bring on Jacob Ramsey, who's done all right earlier in the season?
And, like, the only way Villa were going to score something there was if Jack Grealish did something. I wouldn't have brought on El Ghazi. I wouldn't have brought on Traore. El Mahamedy wasn't good when he came on, but Villa weren't creating chances. There was no point in having, you know, nice footballers on the pitch. They should have just left Elmo on. Brought on Elmo in the right wing whenever Trezeguet had to come off, and they probably should have just left on Hourihane for set pieces. The other thing is as well, let Hourihane hit the set pieces.
Yeah.
Why is Grealish hitting corners? Hourihane's shown that he can hit the set pieces from the free kicks in that game. We all know over the last 2.5 years what he's shown he can do. Just put Grealish into the box or the edge of the box. He's your best player. Don't have him crossing in the ball whenever you've got someone who can strike a corner just as well, if not better.
Well, in the last two seasons, Grealish has scored two volleys from the edge of the box, direct from a corner, and he's also scored a volley. And he's probably scored more, but I remember the Southampton one last year where he got headed out and he just hit a half volley into the net. So doing that three times from corners in two seasons means that he should always be at the edge of the box. And what happens again, like, and this is a problem with Hourihane deferring to Grealish, but like, when Grealish isn't hitting a corner, Hourihane gives it to Grealish short, which always isn't a bad option. But that one was a complete ball straight after the goal, the second goal in the second half, where Hourihane plays it to Grealish and then it goes on the loop around him and then tries to backheel it back to Grealish. Grealish is offside. It's just like, what are you doing? Like, we've got the best corner kick taker in the league. Just put it in. Like, Konsa's winning everything. Put it in.
Yeah, Villa have a real problem with just, they just can't turn that down. As soon as someone goes short for a corner, they just can't resist it. It's a bizarre habit that they have. Just, you're right, whip the ball in. Like, giving Hourihane a slightly better angle is pointless, especially because he's going to backheel it to Grealish. He hasn't bothered getting back onside, the lazy prick. Edit that out, mate. Edit that out. I don't want anybody hearing that.
Well, actually, it's funny. I didn't have this written down, but you reminded me of one final WhatsApp wins that I meant to write down. Ah, Jack, like, sometimes you only need to take it past three people. You don't need to go for the fourth.
Everybody was playing so badly tonight, apart from Grealish, that he was probably just looking up and saying, ah, fuck, I better just keep going here. I'm not passing it to one of these useless spoons.
Oh, we'll do some categories.
We're going to start with the thoughts of the Villa podcast.
Maybe it was just because I really didn't want to fucking lose to Leeds United.
And the lifting up of Patrick Bamford with one hand, I did enjoy that because Patrick Bamford is an unlikable character and he's probably been a bit of a twat to Tyrone Mings all game.
He's nothing like that either, is he? He's a real...
He's an unlikable character.
Like, what have he's put on a foot? Patrick Bamford can't skin you. He's not that type of player. It's not any game. Somebody put on a foot there.
I felt all the pain. I imagine I probably sound as much of a biased, one-eyed idiot.
Block the fucking shot.
It was a fucking disaster.
I did quite enjoy the hopelessness of their grief with it, though, as well. Though, because they're like, not that it fucking mattered anyway. Sure, we were beaten anyway.
Not that it fucking mattered anyway. Villa was shite.
Like, there's nothing but space. Leeds are going to be spanked a few times this season. Make no mistake about that. I mean, they're really well coached. They're really aggressive. They're really adventurous. But the players are shit.
The key line is that we're well coached and very aggressive, but our players are shit.
They're not either. They're not shit.
I mean, that was great. That did have everything. Only downside, those Brummie accents, though. Really go through you, don't they?
All right, some categories. You let Glenn Whedon take a 90th minute penalty award. I don't even have the person written down here. Oh, I know what it is. That's why I didn't write it down. Ollie Watkins hitting a penalty. I wouldn't have thought that because I think I did say in the last game that he would have buried his penalty, and then I saw his fucking penalty map and it was the most atrocious thing I've ever seen. Scored 2 out of 5, which is already horrendous. And one of them was just like down the middle, and then the other one that we know was against Southampton when the game was over, so it doesn't really count. So then I looked at that thinking, how has this boy been allowed to hit some penalties?
It's strange, yeah. 4 out of 6 missed. That's a terrible record by anyone's standards. And it's like, it was a bad penalty. Like, if you hit the penalty off target, then, like, you know, get off the fucking stage. Why is he hitting that penalty? It was a soft enough penalty to win, but, you know, it was stupid from Rice because he's pulling back a man who is definitely going to miss anyway.
And like, it's right. Like, Rice is good. He's long. He's leggy. Like, he's going to get in there and block him anyway, even when he did get a shot.
Like, if Rice puts any sort of pressure on Trezeguet there, Trezeguet's going to miss. He just doesn't need to pull his shirt. It's just lazy and absent-minded and stupid from Rice, the traitor. It was just like, he'd lost his head for some reason. But luckily for him, Villa send up some lad with a 33% success rate from penalty kicks.
Well, this is the thing, right? And we know, like, well, I don't know, do we know? He's not the best at them, but, like, you're talking about Grealish being the talisman. Like, surely he just needs to be calling rank and taking the penalties.
So, Watkins has scored a penalty this year for Villa, and it was a great penalty. Do you remember before that, Grealish wanted it, and Watkins took it off him? So I don't know what's happened there. They're obviously, they couldn't have not discussed who's hitting the penalty. And so I can only assume that Watkins is the assigned penalty taker, because otherwise, why would Grealish have given him that one? And it must have, like, Watkins is the penalty taker, so he was taking tonight's as well.
You can't be hitting the fucking bar when you're 2-1 down. That's a joke.
No, it's fucking shit, yeah. And the keeper goes so early as well. Like, Fabianski is a good penalty goalkeeper, but he wasn't for that penalty.
Yeah.
It just looks so bad whenever the keeper goes the wrong way as well. Like, how badly have you fucked up there? You have so much net to aim at. Keeper's on the ground and you're hitting the crossbar at the other side. Christ almighty, mate.
There is something I really enjoyed Watkins taking that off Grealish last week, but or whenever it was against Southampton. But there's, you know, because I remember like when Werner wasn't taking them for Chelsea and Jorginho was taking, I was like, what an absolute beta male. Like, he's Timo Werner, he's been bought, he's the big signing, he's the big striker. He's supposed to like take this team on to the next level, and he's letting Jorginho hit penalties ahead of him. But in this case as well, like, yeah, you have Grealish, who's like one of the best players in the world, and he's obviously the talisman of this club, and he should be doing whatever he wants. Like, he should not be having Watkins call rank on him. Grealish is sound, he probably wants his striker to score as well. But also you have Conor Hourihan on the pitch, who would put it away. And one thing he'll do is put away a penalty.
Yeah, and I had absolutely no worries about Conor Hourihan. I remember the playoff final, Hourihan steps up, and I was just like, oh, thank fuck, it's Hourihan.
Yeah.
This is going in, it's grand, don't worry about it. Like, it didn't even flicker across my mind that Hourihan wouldn't score.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Ball strikers should be the people who hit the penalty, and maybe it should have been Hourihan.
Hourihan also scored against Slovakia in the playoffs penalty shootout for Ireland after missing a fucking sitter, the only reason that they were in the playoffs. So this is the thing, like, it doesn't affect him. Like, Hourihan loves his left foot, so, you know, it doesn't affect him that he's not playing badly, even though he didn't do anything bad in this game to make him think that way. I'm talking about Watkins. There was something before he hit a penalty where I was like, he's just missed a big chance. This isn't good for a striker now to be hitting a penalty. There was something about that where I just thought, now obviously they're 2-1 down as well, and you're worried about them not getting another chance. But yeah, I didn't fancy it.
No, and you were right. Yeah, big chance missed. Maybe not hit the penalty.
I was right. The Ronnie Rosenthal Award, Watkins penalty, the Watkins header, which we've mentioned a few times already now, but that's not good enough. Grealish has just rinsed four players and set you up 5-6 yards out of a free header. You've missed it. You hit it over the bar. You get another one off target. And the Trezeguet one, which I think is probably the worst of them all. Watkins, he doesn't hit it to him first time, which I was like, oh, for God's sake, but then he does really well to get across him again anyway. And Trezeguet just runs into the ball, runs over the top of the ball, and he's hitting it wide, and the keepers give him the corner at least.
It's a tough one. Trezeguet is definitely the bigger miss, but I want to give it to Watkins because of how much of a fuck up it was after what Jack Grealish had just done.
Yeah, that's a good case.
But you're giving it to Trezeguet.
No, do you know what? I'm not pissed off at Grealish being that far ahead. Like, that's a moment there where, like, I think you said it, like, you know, Grealish is now thinking, I need to start playing with players who score these goals. Like, you know, in the week that Maradona has been remembered for everything that he done. Now, in fairness, a lot of those clips of players end up missing as well after Maradona does something brilliant. But Maradona went on and won a World Cup, and he won Serie A titles with Napoli. Grealish needs to be at that level to have more and more clips made of him. Anyway, move on. We'll give it to Watkins. I see Westwood. Oh, he was playing a ward. Trezeguet, anonymous before that fucking miss. And I've got no Trezeguet. Let's do Trezeguet first. Do you keep playing him?
Imagine being a professional footballer and the first thing you do after being on the pitch for 60 minutes is miss from 1 yard out.
Yeah.
Like, that is just diabolical. Do you keep playing Trezeguet? Like we've talked about it. What are you doing otherwise? You're not playing El Ghazi. Are you playing Traore on the right wing where he wants to be and where he just can't resist all his bad habits? I don't think so.
Play Elmo.
Play Elmo. Maybe play Elmo. I don't know.
I'm saving him for target's position.
It's a long fucking way to January.
It is. It really is. I think Villa are crying out for it now as well, which is the unfortunate thing. Yeah. It's funny, like, because I wrote down Trezeguet for this award after about 50 odd minutes before the sitter. And this shows just how anonymous he was. I remember him taking a touch in the centre circle and rolling right to the left. And I was like, oh, that's Trezeguet. That was the most noteworthy thing he had done. Like it was, I actually genuinely haven't seen a more anonymous performance than that one.
No, the only thing he did in the first half was clear an attacking corner.
Right.
There was a corner played in for by Hourihan, and Trezeguet rises above everyone and flicks it out of West Ham's box for them.
The only other nominee I have for this, and I don't even know if we should count because he did comment it, but everything he did was wrong, was John McGinn. Like, he was anonymous for most of the game, and then when he came into the game, I wish he was anonymous because just couldn't do anything right.
Yeah, he was absolutely useless tonight again. John McGinn slipping into... Around this time last season as well, John McGinn... Now, I know there's been less games played this time, but around November, December last year, John McGinn really went off the boil. And whenever John McGinn got injured, a lot of people were worried. I wasn't worried because John McGinn had been playing shite for a long time before his injury last year. And I'm just worried he's slipping back into that. He was desperate tonight, just making the wrong decision, running with it when it wasn't on, running with it when he was going into blind alleys. That's exactly what that big team of useless lumps wants you to do, is just run into their trap of four lads. You're standing there ready to take your ankles or the ball, whatever one, they don't care. Don't run into them. Pass the ball around them. Whenever Villa moved the ball, West Ham didn't know what was happening. Like I said before, West Ham are shite. Pass the ball around them. Don't just run in the alleyways they want you to go down. Don't just... The first 20 minutes, John McGinn played about three blind passes to nobody. What are you doing? Trezeguet's on the right wing. I know that John McGinn has to expect that his right winger's making certain runs, but whenever it's Trezeguet, you have to maybe adapt your play a little bit. He's probably not going to make the run. He's not playing yet. He's only going to turn up in the 60th minute when he's missing from a yard out.
The McGinn is he's a victim of Ross Barkley as well, which I'm just thinking, we're talking about it's a long way to January. It's a long way for the 2 or 3 weeks. Ross Barkley's back, and generally that's usually 3.5-4 weeks when somebody says that. Because McGinn has been at his best this season when him and Dougie have been playing as the sitters, he's let the game come to him by just working hard, being in the right position, doing the right simple things, being that player that goes up in the lineman meter, because it's like, ah, there's McGinn again putting out a fire. And then when he gets into that action mode, then he's just providing these little sparks of, not even magic, just action. These sparks of action. He's earth turns somebody and it takes somebody out of the game. It just starts. It gets the other people more lively. He plays the ball. He's got players in front of him because Ross Barkley's there. But when Ross Barkley isn't there, he tries too hard. And this is what we said about the Brighton game as well, about him falling on his face, because he's just trying to take it past three players, and he's not that player, and he's just trying too hard rather than just letting the game come to him.
And this is an interesting question. I mean, I thought he got it spot on against Brighton when he brought on Traore for Barkley, because that meant he didn't have to change his whole team. He just changed his number 10. Whenever you bring in Hourihan, then you're taking McGinn out of his best position. You're taking Dougie out of his best position. You're playing Hourihan, which isn't helpful for anybody. So you've lost. Not only have you lost your number 10, you've also lost your number 8, because he's not playing in his best position anymore. Because he has to play a different role. So should we have just played Traore again tonight? So you're only losing one player, as opposed to losing two.
Yeah, there was something in me that wanted to see Hourihan, and it's funny. I should get off Twitter, but I do remember about a year ago, people talking, or a year and a half maybe, people talking about Hourihan's best position has actually been number 10, but he's never played there. So I was like, oh, I wonder, if he does play there, will he be good? And he's not that player. But the IC Westwood Award is Trezeguet, obviously. The Vyman meter, not going down because he's already at rock bottom as my target. I've got one player going up, I think. I sort of had initially Luiz and Mings, but they're definitely not going up. But I was like, okay, they've got a bit of a break after an international break now. They're lively again. They're not doing anything wrong. But that's a very low bar. But the player I have going up is Hourihan, because he did exactly what you expect him to do. Like, Conor Hourihan is a set piece kicker, and his set pieces were brilliant. Villa could have scored a few from him. He skimmed the post from a free. He was good from that point of view. And like, it's like a, you know, a wide receiver. Like, I already was almost judging him before he first set piece, because I was like, all right, you're here to hit set pieces, let's do it. I already had an analogy in my head of like a wide receiver in the NFL who, you know, says he can't catch the ball. I was like, well, sorry, mate, but you're not playing them. Hourihan's supposed to take free kicks, and he came on and he did it well. So he's going up for me.
Yeah, they were two clever free kicks as well as being well struck. You know, he fashioned that one that he scored from before, where he rolls at the Grealish stops it and he hits it around the wall. And that one, he forced Fabianski into a good save. It's Fabianski's side. If it goes in, there's big question marks for Fabianski, but Hourihan still hits it well. Going up in the Vima meter, I think, is very, very generous.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to talking about Matt Target going down. So let's just agree that Hourihan hit two good free kicks and he stands still in the Vima meter.
Two good free kicks, few good corners.
A few good corners. Yeah, okay.
Stand still, okay. What do you want to talk about Matt Target for?
Because we haven't mentioned yet, Matt Target in the first half got in front of his man, and you're there thinking, all right, fair play. And he trips over a combination of his own legs and Bowen's static trailing leg. He dives under the ball. In the box, in his own box, he's the covering defender. He dives under the ball. What the fuck was that about? That was one of the most pathetic pieces of defensive play I've ever seen.
Well, it's so funny because I have a section on Target here that I just thought, I'll not bother. And I do have that just like falling flat in his face instead of heading the ball when he's in the box in front of a defender or in front of a forward. And like you say, that's the most pathetic thing you've ever seen. Another one that went unnoticed, and it gave West Ham a corner for no reason, was when he was afraid to attack one that was sort of about 30 yards out, and he was afraid to attack it because Tyrone Mings was putting him under pressure. I don't know what he was worried about, and then he let it bounce, and then he fell underneath it. I think he panicked because it bounced up in the air, and then obviously West Ham started closing down, and he just like crumbles underneath, and then West Ham get a corner, and I was like, if they score from this, I'm going to kill this man. But I said he can't go down because he's at rock bottom. I don't know how much further he can fall.
Yeah. He kicked the fucking ground trying to put in a cross. He was inside West Ham's box and he kicked the ground.
Yeah, and then in the last attack, he kicked it out of play for no reason, under no pressure.
Let's move on before our fucking heads explode.
Question mark over this one. Going down, Ollie Watkins. Question mark is because, in fairness to Watkins, I start judging him before he gets these chances, and that's what you want from a striker. You want him to be not in a game and still have the chances. But when he gets these fucking chances, I want him to score. But I had him going down, like regardless of the team that were playing him shit balls. I was just getting annoyed at him as well for some reason. Because it was like, you know, run somewhere different. I don't know what it was. I was just getting frustrated at everybody. But then he turns around and misses a 5-yard header and then misses a penalty. Hits it off target. Matt Target.
We've done him. Ollie Watkins going down, he misses big chances and he's a centre forward. I think he has to go down. Like, he played okay holding up shit balls at the start of the first or during the first half, but who cares whenever you fucking lose a game?
I don't. Yeah, I'm pissed off at him, and you know what? I'm disappointed at him. I think that's it for categories. Like, where I'm just 9 games in and I'm done. Like, I feel like this would have been way better just smoothed out over these 9 games, but I got too excited after the Leicester. I think the title of the podcast after the Leicester game is Villa's title to lose. I was getting carried away with Villa being a really good team. Like, they're not. Smith is a good manager, and he's getting them into good positions to win games, and they're just not good enough to win them. And Grealish is going to leave. You know, I was getting like this is I was getting excited talking to you about how can we keep Ross Barkley, you know, because I was thinking we are close now to stepping on to the next level. If we get top six, we can keep Barkley, keep Grealish. They're all gone. This is going to be a lot slower than I was hoping for four games in.
Like, I mean, I was fairly calm at the start of last season when Villa were losing to Bournemouth and Palace, and they were drawn to West Ham and Burnley, I think it was, because they were playing well. But, you know, like, the reality is I should have been worried about them not winning games they should be winning, games yeah. they were doing enough to win, because sure as shit, they were going to find themselves in games that they didn't deserve to win, and they weren't going to fucking win those either. So this is perhaps a slight worry that they're starting to do this again. There's been three or four, like, they were better than Brighton. They were better than West Ham tonight. They should be beating those teams.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be as concerned as you are. 4 from 5 is bad. It is. It's a really bad return. But we've had some fantastic results. We beat Leicester and we beat Liverpool. They're both in the top. They're both our top four rivals. We still have a game in hand. A game in hand still takes us into the top four. Because Man United, Man City are around us, so they've got a game in hand as well. But I think that game in hand still would still take us into the top four. We're not in a bad position. I mean, we've won 5 games. The frustrating thing is that we've lost 4, and 2 of those we definitely should have won. We wanted to be a bit more positive about it. Do we want to be a bit more positive?
No, was that a question? I thought you were saying, if you want to be a bit more positive about it, then you were going to give me something positive, because I was like, I haven't heard anything fucking positive yet.
So, we missed a penalty. We missed 2 absolute sitters. 2 absolute sitters. And we had a goal disallowed because they changed the handball rule. Like, Villa dominated that game, and those 4 huge incidents that could have just gone another way. There's no way you miss 2 sitters and a penalty in a game in an ordinary circumstance.
But this is it. This is as much as the Leicester game showed a bit of a habit. They'd won 3 games in a row, just beating Leicester, kept it tight, or just beating Liverpool, kept it tight, and then nicked it against Leicester, and you get into a habit of winning. Like, losing's a habit as well, and Villa are susceptible to it more than anybody, because every time they go behind, the facts are that they lose, they don't even get a draw. Do you know what? This is actually shows how worried I am about their mentality. That, you see, today, obviously I would have loved a win, but I was actually thinking, I would love a draw tonight. I would love a draw that shows that Villa aren't bonkers. Like, when it got to 2-1, I was like, I'm not going to be happy now with 2-2, because again, like, yeah, Villa just conceded 2 goals from 2 attacks. But I would have loved a nice 0-0 draw. You know, Villa just got back on track. Let's just get a point. Let's not be fucking idiots. But yet again, there's just no sign. It's just, they're too out of control. John Terry's just having too much crack. And they're, yeah, you just don't, like, they can score a lot of goals and they can concede a lot of goals. That could be fun. But until there's enough points on the board, it's not going to be fun, because it's like, you can just keep losing these games, especially if you're going to lose to relegation rivals.
Colin, like I've always said, Villa are going to finish between 13th and 14th. Yeah. We've got fucking Newcastle. Steve Bruce up next. He fucked us for 2 years. He can't keep fucking us. We'll beat Newcastle on Friday night. Then we've got a derby to go on there to get us all G'd up again. Villa are going to be all right.
Yeah. Right. Newcastle on Friday night. So a quick turnaround. Another nighttime game. Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope I'm signing off on a positive. I feel like every podcast is ending with, so tune in if you want to next time. If you're enjoying the show, yeah, check us out on Twitter, The Villa Podcast. If you have any thoughts or whatever, send us an email at thevillapodcast@gmail.com. Don't really know what I'm looking for in those emails, but it would be nice to hear from you. There's a regular cohort of you out there, so yeah, let's hear some thoughts or what you think. And yeah, sure. See you on Friday. That wind is calling my name, and I won't wait, or I'll never get on.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.